Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Thursday, February 8th study session of the Mesa City Council. I'd like to excuse Mayor Hawker, who is out of town on city business. We have seven items on the agenda, and it's my understanding that we're going to swap items 1 and 2. If we could do that, is there any objection on the part of the council on that? Thank you. We're still waiting for a couple of people to arrive. So item 2 is to discuss and take action on council committee guidelines as recommended by the ad hoc committee, otherwise known as the Committee on Committees, which is my favorite committee of all time. We have in front of you, we have both the minutes from that committee, the two meetings that we had, and the members of the committee, Council Member Rawls, Council Member Summers, and myself. And you have the minutes, and also you have from Ms. Spinner, she did a really nice job of compiling all of that and recommending some guidelines. The guidelines would not be part of the ordinance, they would just be separate guidelines, and so the council could change them as they needed to. Changing the titles and the types of committees would require an ordinance change, and so a possible ordinance change is also in your packet. We also have, I have given to each of you a copy of a couple of proposed revisions. Ms. Spinner did a really nice job, asked me to look at it. I looked at it, thought it was good, had some more time to mull it over, and came up with a couple of other things that I thought we had talked about as a committee that maybe we needed to capture. And so I have a few proposed changes that I just dropped in front of you this morning. So I think that there are a couple of things that we need to do here. One is to discuss whether or not this captures the essence of what you were looking at, what we were trying to do in terms of refine the process with council committees. Also, we have new committees. Sorry, Kyle. We have new committees that are being recommended. We have a possible timeline for adoption if this council decides to go ahead of it, and you have that ahead with this, and you have that in front of you. Ms. Spinner got that to us this morning. I know that staff has been anxious to know how to schedule committee meetings if we're going to make changes, so we'd like a timeline on that so we can proceed with our existing committees until that change takes place. So how about if we start out by discussing whether or not this captures the intent that everyone had in terms of trying to refine the committee process, what comes to committees, and you know, how we go about doing the operation of committees. Anybody want to kick that off?
Is that a question to committee?
We'll have a committee on the Committee on Committees. Council Member Griswold.
I really appreciate the work that you all did, and I think it moved us forward to be a more efficient organization here. I particularly like what you've included in the areas of responsibility in the different committees. A lot of the committee structure didn't make sense to me and what it covered and what it didn't, and this seems to make a lot more sense, and I think we'll get better results for the residents, so thank you for your work.
You know, and since you brought that up, perhaps the easiest thing would be if people, as they comment on how they feel about the various committees. I will freely admit that when we went into this process, I was not a supporter of combining police and fire committees together to make public safety committee. That was something that Council Member Summers had proposed. And and actually, the more we looked at it, the more it made sense to me, particularly in a time when we're dealing with issues of grants that have to do with Homeland Security that address both police and fire together. And so it really made a lot of sense. So I appreciate Council Member Summers bringing that forward. So Council Member Griswold, do you want to comment on that too? Are you all right with the outline of how the committees are here?
Yes, very much. At first, you know, being chairman of the fire committee, which I enjoy, I was sort of, you know, what are we doing? And then I could see from the Homeland Safety, et cetera, that probably a wise move, although I will regret going off the fire committee because my son-in-law is a policeman, so I won't be able to serve.
Thank you. Anybody? I'm going to ask everybody, so who wants to go next? Councilmember Rawls.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I liked what we put together here. I also like the revisions that you've proposed to the purpose of the council committees. Technical thing, we need to put the two and three in brackets in order to make it consistent. You've got bracket one, but no bracket two or three. But I like the division of labor. I would point out that on page two of the guidelines, under the decisions of council committees, the second sentence dealing with utility rates, I do believe that needs to reflect that it needs to go to the full council with recommendations from the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and the Audit and Finance Committee in order to make it consistent with the earlier statement under 2A3, which is that the Audit and Finance Committee will review all city fees. So with that, with those two, one technical and one substantive change, I think it's a very workable model, and I think it's a great improvement.
Thank you, and I concur. I think we need to make that change. Councilmember Whelan.
Thank you. I guess my only question on public safety would be some specific guidelines on our actions with the courts. The courts are an independent body, so that we would have to work primarily on procedural matters within the court system and not in items referring to how a judge hands a particular case. Those would be my only concerns in having courts within the committee structure. And I don't know whether you guys could work on some guidelines for that. I don't want to get us into a position to where we're accused of directing the courts to go in a certain way. I think we just need to deal with it administratively.
That's correct. And if you would like some language in these guidelines to reflect that, that's true. But
I think it just might make sense to make sure that we keep that separation of powers in order. And I'm sure Mr. Rouse would agree with that.
That would be great. The guidelines were designed to give guidance to the committee chairs and to the committee members. So I think that's a great idea. Just because we all understand it today doesn't mean that down the road someone doesn't misunderstand.
And then in discussions with Chief Beck from the fire department, he indicated a request that perhaps one member of the public safety committee could kind of take a lead with each fire and police department so they have one person to go to, or perhaps, you know, go to the chair. I don't know how you would prefer to work with that. I don't have any problem with, you know, one member being primarily designated to work with the police department, one member primarily with the fire department, one member with the courts. I guess you could work that way to make sure that there's a central point of contact so the chief doesn't have to go to each three different members. You may want to talk about that and see what Chief Gascon feels about it or Judge DeFoya.
You know, you're the chair of that committee. You're the recommended chair for that committee, so
right.
You might want to mull that with your committee and see if you can come back with a recommendation. Councilmember Summers?
That's what I was going to ask, if that's something that you can do within that committee itself, a little leeway within committees, because the other committees could probably do, a couple of them anyway, could do similar things. Transportation and infrastructure, for example, has three if they wanted to run it that way. Chief Beck's only concern was that they have enough time to be heard in certain issues.
Exactly.
I think we've addressed that to his satisfaction. And our DeFoya, he's the chief judge, it was something that he and I had discussed. There was no place for courts to have any discussion, and particularly when I first came on, when we were talking about the new court building. And it would have been nice to have a subcommittee to look at that a little more closely. So I agree that we're not looking at influencing the judicial system, but they certainly were. The judge was interested in having some rapport with counsel where appropriate. So this would offer that opportunity.
Councilmember Whelan, would you be comfortable with each committee making determinations like that on its
yes.
own, or were you looking for something
no,
in the guidelines itself?
I don't think it necessarily has to be within the guidelines. I think we could work that out within the individual committees. But I think it's important that there's a single point of contact. And obviously, the chair is always available, but you might have someone who has a more level of expertise or someone who wants to work closely with one department versus the other. And that's something I think we can bring to our first committee meeting to talk about it.
Is everyone all right with that concept? I'm looking down here and I can see everybody's faces except Mr. Rawls. Is everybody okay with that concept of the committees deciding? Okay, all right.
And the other issue is the committee system has been not necessarily scheduled. Have you done any thoughts about having a certain time period where at least there's a committee meeting every 6 weeks or 60 days, or is it still going to be on an as-needed basis?
You know, I think that's up to this group. If we want to establish that in here, I added the working with staff section to address some of the issues of having a single point of contact with staff and also making sure that there's a feedback loop. But, you know, let's add that to what people are commenting on. So what's your feeling on that?
I'm open.
Okay. Councilmember Summers.
I'm available to convene a committee at the request of staff, but I hesitate on wanting to put in every month we're going to meet, because the less I'm exposed to PowerPoint, the longer I live, I think. So if I don't need to be exposed to it.
We have a PowerPoint right
up
to
that. Oh.
I see a research study coming, length of life, exposure to power.
I've already lasted a few years on that thing.
Councilmember Griswold.
I just sold my restaurant, so it's easier for me to do it. But before, when I was working, it was very, very difficult. If meeting was on a day that I couldn't make it, et cetera, I would almost like to have them scheduled after the Thursday meeting as a standard one spot there. It's very difficult when meetings just appear. One transportation meeting just appeared when I'm going to be out of the country along with another council member I know is going on at the same time. So those kind of things, it would be easier, I think, to put them on set days and be able to keep those schedules open for particular people that are working, I believe. But I'm open for that one. It doesn't affect me as much as it used to.
Councilmember Whalen.
I tend to agree with that. If we could try to schedule our committee meetings on Thursdays, I think it's easier for the public to know that there's a potential committee meeting. It's even the possibility of getting some of those committee meetings on television for the public might be available at that point, just to provide more information. I know that a lot of people have talked to me about they'd really like to know more about what goes on within the police department, perhaps even transportation or some of the other committees. So maybe we could look at making that a standing time if it works.
Councilmember Rawls.
Yeah, I agree with the standing time, and I've always tried to set my committee meetings right after the study session. But I'm not sure that I want to say, okay, transportation is going to meet every other Thursday or every sixth Thursday or whatever it is. So I like the idea of a standard time, but I'm not sure that I want to schedule meetings automatically without knowing if we're going to have an agenda.
Councilmember Jones.
Yeah, along that same lines, we've been talking in the past on scheduling either Thursday after study or Monday before council, which typically fits to lump things together because we do have to go out and try and earn some money. And so when we have something that's scheduled randomly, it really throws us off. And so I like the idea of focusing on either before council or after study, but I'm not sure I want to say we shall have one every month, because if there's something not there, why have a meeting just to have it?
Okay, so the preference I'm hearing is for the times to be either on Thursday after study session or Monday before study session, whenever possible, but I'm not hearing a preponderance of have a transportation committee meeting every fourth Thursday or something like that. Does that reflect what fairly? Councilmember Summers.
I'm just curious, since we have a full gallery of smiling staff, if they have any strong opinions, since they're going to be affected as well. And on behalf of staff,
Mr. Brady, would you like to
bailing staff out quickly?
Staff?
You know, the camera isn't on them, so that, you know. Why would I lie?
Vice Mayor, members of council, I appreciate the dialogue, and actually, I think it does help if we can anticipate that we'll schedule those meetings at the times or the times that you've asked to. I think the only thing that sometimes is a challenge is if the committees start moving forward. Because all of you serve on more than just one committee, so it's just that coordination, making sure we're not doubling up on committee meetings where you would have to be at two places at once. But we can work on that. I think the times, it works well for staff, I think, to at least be able to, for scheduling purposes, know that there will be times after Thursday mornings or before Mondays to kind of you know, at least have reserved or think about those being committee times. I think that helps us all as far as managing our time, so I think we can certainly support that and work with you. Maybe what we'll do is, I hear the hesitancy of not necessarily wanting to necessarily have kind of a standing time, but maybe at least we'll reserve those times so that we can fill them up and not have to be trying to move other things around. We'll just know that those are times that we're, the possibility if we have a committee meetings, they'll happen after Thursdays or before the Monday meetings.
So. And maybe for staff, for those of us who have electronic calendars, maybe they should just put a hold on those times.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're just going to start kind of holding that time. So that's fine.
Okay. I don't think everybody's had a chance to comment on the Councilmember Jones. I don't think you got to comment on the whether or not this accomplished what you were hoping we would accomplish in the committee structure.
I think the committee structure, as outlined, is very appropriate. I'm in support of that. We were looking for some change, and I think the committee to address committees has done a very good job about committees. So I'm all right with it. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilmember Griswold.
One other point just to discuss, it's not a major one. There's different ways of getting agenda items onto these committees. One is the mayor, one is the chairman, and the other one is two of the members of a committee. I would almost like to consider, and I'm not sure it's a good idea, so I'd like to see it debated, is two members either on or off the committee could get something on the committee system. Right now, three city council members can put anything on the council agenda. I would like to have as much discussed in this format as possible and not taking it to the general council if it doesn't, you know, not worked out fully. So I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad one, but I'd like to sort of just throw that out and see what other people think of that idea.
Okay. Councilmember Whelan.
I don't have any problem with that.
Two
members of a committee.
No, two members of
the council.
Get on the council. If you're not on that committee.
The committee would be a quorum.
Yeah, you can't even talk about it.
Well, you couldn't talk about it, but what you could do is you could say,
I would like
to place this on the agenda. You can't have a discussion about it. You don't violate open meeting law by, as a matter of fact, I think the Attorney General has said specifically, you don't violate open meeting law by placing something on an agenda.
That's correct. You can say you would like the item placed on the agenda. What you cannot do is substantively discuss or state your position on the item, but you can discuss placing it on the agenda.
Okay. So, Councilmember Rawls.
I think we threw that around a little bit in the committee and we didn't quite know what to do with it. We came back to the two committee members, but I don't have a problem with having two council members, neither one of who sits on the committee, going to the chairman and saying, we want this on, and the chairman has to put it on. I think that's, so I would just take it to, take the word committee out and make it two council members.
I think my concern with it was having somebody who is not on the committee and you know, working with all of you, I can't see this happening with any of you, but we're setting something up, we're putting it in ordinance, was having two people who do not serve on a committee hijack the agenda of that committee. And that's a concern for me.
Yeah, if I can,
please,
I think the bigger concern for me is having those two council members who don't serve on the committee, who might serve on another committee, say we're gonna put, if you're not gonna run it through your committee, we'll run it through our committee, which then sort of blurs the jurisdictional lines about what they're supposed to consider. I think it's more important to have the issue assessed and determined and evaluated by the appropriate committee than it is to worry about who raises the issue. I appreciate your concerns, Claudia, but I'm more concerned about the other thing happening, which is hijacking the topic rather than hijacking the committee.
You don't want to become conference.
Yes.
Right.
And we actually
with or without PowerPoint.
You're getting to see a piece of the discussion that we had in our committee because, you know, we talked about if we put in how we put in here that you should be discussing issues that are generally related to your committee. That's in the guidelines. But then Tom said then we get to people determining what, you know, how that. So maybe it takes care of that. Maybe it takes care of the whole issue of.
So if you don't talk about my issue, I won't talk about yours in my committee.
Yeah.
Kind of a flip of what you're talking about, the same
thing. Yeah. Okay, fine points.
what I had seen and probably modeled in the legislature is something never seen the light of day, you know, due to political considerations, not because it's a practical issue. And I would like to be able to speak in the committee. The committee chairman wants to just give it a very 3-minute, anybody in favor of this, no, go on to the next point. I don't think it hijacks the committee, but at least it sees the light of day a little bit. I'd hate to see things get buried that need to be discussed, even if they're not politically popular. So,
I don't disagree with that thought. Councilmember Summers.
If I may take the liberty to make some brief comments on this in this process.
Please.
The committee to committees, first of all, it gives us a giggle every time we say it, but it's not just simply to change, just to make changes. There was real concern about the effectiveness of the committee, the breadth of what we were discussing, where things go, and how confusing this was, not only to the general public, to the folks who don't get to see this every day, but for those of us on the council as well, not having a full understanding. When you look at the old system, as an example, I'm going to steal Rex's paper. One of the issues that was brought up in the Republic today, I'm sorry to the rest of the newspaper, I just gave a plug to the Republic. They talk about, in some areas, the housing code and fighting blight. Well, there's really not a great place for that on our old system. Maybe it could go to general and economic development. It could even be public safety. But under the new system now, we have community and neighborhood services committee. So already we have a problem and a place to take it for the change. So I think these changes reflect a broadening view of some of the challenges that the city faces. It's going to be a more efficient, particularly public safety combinations. There was some concern there, but now we see where the grants that are coming in affect both police and fire. And so it was well worth our time and effort. I think we'll have some better governance with this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Whelan?
One of the other issues that I apologize if I didn't see it here. In the past, we've not allowed citizens to issue testimony at a committee unless...
It's on page 3.
You're going to go ahead and put citizens or present on there. And how about an agenda item? Can a citizen speak on the agenda item?
What we've done is we've taken items from citizens present, which we currently have on our study session and also on our council meetings, and we have taken that and put it at the front end of committee meetings with a maximum time of up to 15 minutes of public comment time so that people can comment on something that's coming forward on your agenda. Maximum amount of time of 3 minutes per speaker, so you could have 5 speakers. But if the committee chair says, look, I see a whole lot of people in the audience here, we're going to take 15 minutes of public comment, but I'm going to limit everyone to a minute and a half each so that we can get more speakers, you could do that. It makes it so that your meeting wouldn't go on forever. It lets people comment before you all of us do our business. It's actually a model that I think MAG uses, and that was what we were looking at. Does that take care of, it also allows the committee chair discretion to take a comment. You could set up, for instance, a hearing. If you're the transportation committee and you're about to put in an overpass someplace, you could, as the chair, say, we are going to have a hearing. Your committee determines you're going to have that, and you would take public comment throughout that process. Does that answer the question?
Yes. And then along those same lines, couple of utility committee issues, if we're dealing with water service or sewer service outside the city, a no vote from the committee did not forward to council. I'm assuming we'll keep that same position, and if somebody wanted to forward, they just have to get 3 council members to take it forward or the mayor to bring it forward.
And that is correct. As a matter of fact, if you go to the guidelines on decision page 2, item number 3, it says decisions of council committees.
unless otherwise required by law, an item that does not receive a majority affirmative vote by the council committee will not be forwarded to the full council. An exception to this guideline is the setting of utility rates, which will go to the full council with a recommendation from the Transportation and Infrastructure Council Committee, and we're adding, and the Audit and Finance Council Committee. Notwithstanding the above, items may be placed on the council agenda by the mayor, city manager, or three council members, as is stated in Mesa City Code 1-5-7B. Is that acceptable?
And really, it's utility issue. It's about the only one that we have difficulty with.
Well, actually, we've had, and you're right, but we've also had issues that people have said, I'm going to vote no and forward it to the council with a no recommendation. And what we've said is, didn't that, you know, if the answer is no, isn't the answer no? And then if the mayor or three council members want to put it on the agenda for discussion at the full council in spite of that vote, then they can do that. So this is a different, this would
take
a different.
You have to vote yes and forward it, even if you don't want to approve it.
If you think that this should go to the full council, you can do that.
I voted yes before I voted no.
You can become a famous senator, yes.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I've done that a couple of times. I think the full seven people, although my personal opinion was against it, I thought that seven people ought to consider it, not just myself. So I've been personally against it, but thought everyone should discuss it. So I put it ahead with those comments. And they've come out in the record fairly well that I was against something, but I thought seven people should discuss it, not just be killed by two. So.
But it does allow the committee to have things die in committee. Councilmember Jones.
Well, then along that same line, when it comes forward, maybe the wording should specify to come forward to the council, but not with full approval or something. I mean, just because typically a yes vote means it's coming forward with approval.
Well, that
how are we going to specify that?
Because you could make a motion that said, my motion is for this to go to the full council with this council committee saying, we think that this is not a good idea. You could make a motion to that effect.
Okay.
Any other questions on that one? Okay, we have some actions that we can take this morning, and I just want everyone, if you would, please, to look at the timeline. This would be introduced at the February 20th, the ordinance, because changing the committee names is an ordinance issue. It's in ordinance now. It would have to be changed in ordinance. So it would be introduced on the 20th, council action on the 5th, and on March 8th, we could consider consider the adoption of the proposed guidelines, because the guidelines don't make any sense unless you've changed the committees. So we would consider the adoption of those guidelines at that point in time, and also the mayor's recommendations for the new council committee assignments, which I think you all got copies of at some point in time here. Is everybody okay with that? So I don't think we need a motion on this, just direction to staff to introduce that. Is that correct?
That's correct, Vice Mayor. If I might run over what I have heard today in terms of changes, so then when it comes back, either the guidelines or the ordinance, make sure it reflects the council discussion today. With regard to the ordinance, the change will be, I think I heard consensus, that it will be two council members as opposed to committee members can place an item on a committee agenda.
That's what I heard. Everybody? Yes.
And then on the guidelines, there would be three changes made. First, we will incorporate the changes that the Vice Mayor brought forward today with on the separate sheet. Second, we'll incorporate Councilmember Rawls's changes to show that the utility changes will go both to the Audit and Finance and to the Transportation and Infrastructure Committees. And third, Councilmember Whalen's comments that we will show that with regard to the courts, we are talking about administrative issues, not with regard to the court's decision on any particular case.
Great. Is there anything else that you have seen here that you think we need to change, particularly with the ordinance? We can, if there are things that you think of later on with the guidelines, those don't have to be introduced. We can make changes as we go along on that. Anything else with the ordinance? Everybody okay with this? Great, we'll move ahead. Thank you very much. All right, we're gonna go back to the pink agenda and go to item number one, which is here, a presentation, discuss and provide direction on development impact fees and residential development tax.
Is this the one with the killer PowerPoint?
Terry!
Definitely.
Got lots of pictures, right?
Good morning, Vice Mayor and Council.
Good morning, Mr. Williams.
We appreciate your delaying momentarily our start this morning. In addition to myself, I want to recognize Stacy Thompson from the Building Safety Office, who has assisted with this. We want to thank Brian Raines and Chuck Odom for also their review and assistance in putting this together. And last and most important, I want to introduce to you this morning, again, back in Mesa today, Jim Duncan of Duncan Associates, who put together the monster study on impact fees for our use at the city. We were fortunate in being able to convince Jim's travel agent that Mesa was on the route between Texas and Oklahoma, where he's going later today. And we're pleased to have him here with us. Out of deference to Councilmember Summers, we apologize for this. I will tell you that when we started, this was almost twice as long as it is this morning.
That's a little consolation.
Can I introduce an ordinance to cut down PowerPoint
supply slide? Second.
I'm sorry, it was not posted for action, and that is not an acceptable motion. Although we might all concur.
I'll make a point that our attorney is not shaking her head.
Just appoint a committee.
Yeah, we'll appoint an ad hoc committee on PowerPoints. Mr. Williams, yeah. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. We have provided for Council's information the Council report on this topic. Again, we're talking about development impact fees. It's time for what is turning out to be about a biennial update of our the fees that we charge to development for to offset the cost to the city for new growth. Attached to that is the report from Duncan Associates, the February 2007 impact fee study. We call that Exhibit A. Exhibit B is also the listing of the potential alternates for the impact fees that will finally be voted on by council. And then lastly is the document noted as the notice of intention, which is the formal first step in the process, and we are expecting to bring that back to council on February the 20th for you all to act on that as a resolution, and that formally starts the 60-day public hearing process. Now, impact fees are not the only area in which the city has the ability to require of development that they pay their fair share of the impact that are created on the city. I want to tell you that the presentation, as lengthy as it is this morning and as detailed as you want it to be, still will not cover all of the possible methods for dealing with new growth, and we're looking forward to coming up with additional creative items in the future for your consideration. So I want to advise you that impact fees are not the end all of everything. I want to start with where we are with our current ordinance. Our impact fee statute, or ordinance rather, is in Chapter 517. We have 9 impact fees at the city. We also have a development residential tax that is often confused as an impact fee because we assess and collect it at the same time, but it's not an impact fee. There are 9 of those. They are applicable within the city limits, and in terms of water and wastewater, also applicable within the areas of the county where we provide those services. Again, these are collected from developers and contractors and property owners when they obtain their building permits and or they obtain water service. We identified at the beginning of the process several issues that council wanted us to address or look into and provide information on. Those include updating, of course, the current fees to the new values for land and facilities. Values of property and facilities continue to rise, and it behooves us to periodically update those values in the basis for our impact fees. Council also asked us to look at a variety of impact fee methodologies and perhaps to even recommend changes, and we're doing that. We will go over some of that this morning. One of the things that was to be considered was should we go to multiple fee districts for certain types of fees, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. There also was an issue raised about whether we should have, or why don't we have, a streets impact fee, and we're going to explain to you why our current method of providing for off-site improvements, we believe is preferable to having street or road impact fees. We also have an issue of how we, whether or not we should continue to charge for cultural impact fees, and we want you all to address that as part of this process. In a quick scan of the recommendations that are coming forward from staff and Duncan Associates, of course, we will update to the 2006 data for the values of our impact fee basis, which are the cost of properties and facilities. We are looking to change our methodology for calculating water and wastewater. We're suggesting that we should not divide into multiple districts, divide the city up into multiple districts for impact fee purposes, except for stormwater, which we currently do. We recommend that we retain the off-site improvements approach rather than have a streets impact fee. And again, we believe under cultural facilities that the council has three options that we will cover. Of those options, two of them would require us to develop a plan for the use of those cultural impact fees, or the recommendation could be to eliminate those fees completely. We're going to talk a little bit about the impact that impact fees have on redevelopment and infill projects as well. So let's jump into it. We start with water. Previously, the city has used what's called, in the parlance of this area, buy-in approach. We would ordinarily approach this with updating only the asset values with no methodology changes. For comparison purposes, staff has estimated the value for doing that and the impact it would have on water impact fees would go for single family residents from $1,011, that is the current rate, to $1,360. Again, these are approximate numbers. We didn't expend resource time and money for Duncan Associates to crunch those numbers. We've estimated them as staff for comparison purposes. And that's because early on the council recommended that we go to an alternate methodology. Jim Duncan and his crew suggested that we do, for water and wastewater, a combination of methodologies, using part of it based on consumption-based methodology that would handle applying current cost to the cost of adding new capacity for water production, pumping, and storage versus improvement-driven, which is the more traditional approach which we take in terms of the pipe system, the water transmission and distribution system. And you see the new approach results in a proposed cost for an equivalent dwelling unit that would be the equivalent of a single family for $2,220. When we factor those by the relative demand uses, a single family being the unity being the equivalent of one, the proposed new fee for single family water would be $2,220. And then because single family attached and multifamily have an impact of about 0.57 or 57% of a single family detached residence, it factors down accordingly, $1,265 and $577. Again, I'm only illustrating the residential portion of the chart. The chart also has fees established for commercial projects based on the size of the water meter, and that's directly calculable to its demand of water. Similarly, on wastewater, Duncan Associates has also suggested this methodology change, so that a portion of the wastewater calculation is consumption-based. That is the portion that is wastewater treatment facilities calculating the current cost of adding additional capacity to deal with those new growth elements. And the second being the improvement-driven approach, which deals with, again, the interceptor collector system, on a per-service unit basis. Again, I'm showing you at the bottom right-hand corner what our current fees are. That is a single-family residence, $1,289. And if all we did was change the methodology and add the additional amount for upgrading the value of our facilities, the result proposed in the Duncan study is $2,659. That's about a 106% increase. Water, by the way, is about 120% increase over the current rate.
Excuse me, we have a question, Terry.
I'm
Councilmember Rawls.
No, Terry, just to bring everything in uniformity, did you do an estimated update for wastewater as you did for water as to what it would be if you kept the current methodology?
Yes, sir, I did.
And just on the single family is the only number I would really need.
All right. It is part of Exhibit B, Councilmember Rawls.
Okay.
It's the alternative number one that says update only, and that amount for wastewater is $1,734.
Okay. Thank you.
Excellent question. Thank you, sir. One of the elements that we were asked to look at by council was the possibility of would it be advantageous if we had multiple districts, if we split the city in some fashion. We asked Duncan and Associates to look at that and offer up their advice. The advice was that since our water system, even though we have two major areas of service, on project, Salt River project area, and off project, even though we have that, we have a relatively uniform level of service throughout the city. And as such, their recommendation is that we retain the current single citywide impact fee service area approach. One of the drawbacks to having multiple districts is that you are restricted to collect fees and spend them within that identified district. So fees that are collected, say if we had a West district and an East district, fees collected in the West could not be utilized for a project in the East. We believe it advantageous to have a single district covering the entire city and the ability to use those funds as council directs anywhere in the city. Switching over now to parks. Again, the proposal in parks is not to change the previous methodology. That's a standards-based approach. It's based on per capita, so many acres of park per 1,000 people. And if you look again at just updating, the difference in the fees would go for single-family residents from $962 to $1,122, just updating the current rise in the value of our park system. We also looked at, should we have multiple districts for parks? It seems logical when you look at the parks map, where all the new parks are proposed, where all the existing parks are. To me, there was a clear dividing line that was Higley Road. Yeah, I know all of you think Higley is far east. See, I've only been here 3.5 years. To me, it's in the middle of the city. It is true, though, that most of the proposed new development in terms of parks is east of Higley Road. And if we divided the city into two sections, you would end up with a slightly higher impact fee in the West because the level of service would be higher. There are more park facilities there. You split them over a greater number of residents per area. You're still going to end up with a slightly higher impact fee in the West. Conversely, in the East, because the amount of facilities we have where we want to create new facilities, we would be limited because we'd end up in effect with a lower impact fee in that area. We believe that if, for instance, we had a fee of $100 in the West and a fee of $50 in the East that the Duncan report would validate for us, that we would be better off as a city if we had one fee throughout the city based at, say, $75, and that you could direct the use of those funds anywhere in the city, be it a park that's needed in the East or a park that's needed in the West. So again, our recommendation is to retain our current single citywide district for the parks.
Councilmember Summers.
Is that based on a state law? Because it seems counterintuitive to me. We're interested in building new parks, in this example, to the east. So we would want to collect a higher fee in the east side as opposed to the west side. So what you're telling me then is based on the formula that's being used, we would actually collect more in the west, but not as enough in the east. Is that correct?
Yes, Vice Mayor, Council Member Summers. Let's keep in mind that impact fees is only one part of the puzzle of developing new parks. It is true that what we're trying to achieve with a park impact fee is to lessen the burden that is fostered onto the city every time we add another house, every time we add another business to our community. We add to the demand for parks. Basically, rooftops add to the demand for parks. So if we want to maintain our current level of service that we provide, for every new rooftop that we add, we need to have an appropriate fee ascribed to that. That's only a part of that. We already recognize that the level of service, if we were to split it into two areas, might be less in the east area. That level of service has to be elevated to the rest of the city level through other than impact fees alone. Impact fees would be a part of that element.
Let me ask a follow-up on that, a theoretical question. Suppose you had a brand new city that has no level of service, and you have no parks in the city at all. How do you levy an impact fee on new homes that are being constructed when there is no level of service to maintain?
Let me ask Jim Duncan to field that one. He's going to.
I was actually looking at Jim when I was asking
tell you
the
about
question.
Plan-based approach.
That's an excellent question, and actually, you would have a problem starting out because there is no level of service to actually buy into. What you would have to do in something like that is, well, first of all, you probably wouldn't have an impact fee. You'd have some other type of a tool. But you could have an impact fee, but it would have to be an improvements-driven in anticipation of improvements you were going to be putting in over time, all right? Let me try to apply it to what Terry was talking about on your parks, because I know what you're trying to do. You've got a west and an east, and they're two totally different worlds. It's almost a tale of two cities because of the built out and the building. If you applied what you're trying to do here, you would actually be penalizing your existing, the built out portion of the city, like Terry was alluding to, because of the pattern. You can look in the report, and you can see on page 42, the pattern of your parks. Your highest level of service is obviously where the people have been and where the city has been existing for over 100 years. So if you applied an impact fee based upon two different sections, it's going to be a lot higher where the level of service is higher, and it's going to be lower out there where you're going to be needing it. And like you said, there's lesser services. So one of the ways is to spread it evenly, which is appropriate and legal. Councilman Summers asked about the state law. I think the state law in every state, including Arizona, is very flexible in methodology. It doesn't prescribe how you have to do it. Some communities are more interested in applying impact fees in what I call a smart growth type of thing. In other words, fitting it into other types of growth, social issues and all that. Some are not. Some are more interested in looking at it just as the amount of income. That's why we explored, as you all directed, various types of ways to do that, and it didn't really apply to Mesa this time. In fact, it would have been punitive. It would counterproductive to some of the objectives that you were looking for. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, promoting infill. That was one of the objectives I think the council had asked us about earlier. On parks, if we had had the two districts, it would have been a higher fee exactly where your infill opportunities are. And that's not what you wanted.
Councilmember Summers?
Well, then, applying the theoretical question to a practical example here, we look at the GM Proving Grounds here in Mesa. It's this large swath of open land, doesn't even have a road, let alone a park, but keeping it to parks. The idea then would be to set up some kind of a fee structure that would be higher in that area, because there's a lot of infrastructure to be developed, than it would be for West Mesa. So why, if there's leeway in the state, why can't we develop some kind of a tiered fee that is actually in reverse of what we're talking about, so that in areas that have nothing, it's a higher fee. In areas like West Mesa that it's already there, you charge a lower fee, and then in that case, we'd be encouraging infill.
Okay. The financing tool that is most used for the situation that you've alluded to and the Vice Mayor's alluded to is really a special district, where you actually focus the improvements in a certain area, an area that is void of the services, you follow what I'm saying? In almost every state, in Texas we call it MUDs, you know, and RUDs, municipal utility districts and road utility. In California, it's a Miller Roots. It's a, you know, it's a special district. In Florida, it's a community development district.
I think it's
I'm
a CFD
sure
here.
CFD.
Yeah. That's your tool you want to use where you have a totally new area, such as what you're describing in the GM area, or in a city that is totally devoid. It basically focuses the cost back on the people. Now, it's not an impact fee, though. It's basically a tax over time that they're basically buying into. And that's why, as Terry said, you know, infrastructure financing is, I call it a cafeteria plan, and you need to pick and choose. You all were somewhat late in the game getting into impact fees. That's why we're here today. I mean, it was just 10 years ago whenever we really got started, and that's sort of why that's why you're behind the
That explain why, when you look at a city, and let's just take one on your chart here, a city like Chandler that is proposing impact fees of I think something like $19,000 for a single family residential home. Now that may be misleading because I think they have streets in there as well, but even backing out the streets, you know, there's going to be considerably higher than ours. Does that explain, because they started impact fees so much earlier, has it kept our impact fees lower?
Your neighbors, Gilbert, several of them, because you know you have a swath of cities, Peoria, some of the cities out in the west as well, that do have fees that are three times what yours are. And part of it is exactly what you said. They started earlier. They have kept up with methodological trends. They have passed on a higher percent. And they're younger cities. Yeah, you know, I mean, you all are a much more mature city than any of these that you're comparing yourself with. Tempe, which is more mature, I mean, in age, doesn't really have impact fees. And there's a, you know, you can sort of look at the pattern. I'm not surprised you are, you know, where you are today. And this is an exciting part for a consultant, because switching gears on methodologies, which, going back to what you said, the courts as well as the legislatures have allowed a lot of local latitude. I mean, as long as you meet certain rational nexus and proportional fair share, you know, do the studies and everything, and it makes sense, they really want you to localize it. They want you to show that, you know, your community is unique and you're coming up with a system. I don't want to get too far ahead of the game because we're not there, but one of the best examples in this study, which is a pretty basic methodological suggestion, is in your fire and public safety. I'm recommending going from a functional, I think we did that last time. Well, we did it last time. It's still a good example. From a functional to a calls for service. When communities start out with impact fees, they don't have the data to do service calls because they've never collected it in that way. But over time, and to you all about three different updates, we switched to the calls for service. Much more stronger nexus. You make more money. I'm sort of going on to more than I had, but you know, your water and wastewater is your biggest item right here. And I could have told you in each of our previous three reviews that you were way behind the eight ball, because your fees were about half what the national average was, okay, for water and wastewater. I mean, you can just look at a series of them. The average for water and wastewater is about $5,000, about half and half for water, half for wastewater. And you can cut that down to about half of each for what I call the horizontal and the vertical components. I'm not an engineer, but, you know, the treatment, the horizontal, and then the lineal, the lines. So this brings you really up to where you should be in, you know, in, if you want to pass on the full cost of growth, where you should be, if you accept some of the recommendations here, brings you up to where you should be. And the irony of it is that you're still, you're going from a third of your neighbors to maybe about half of your neighbors. You see what I'm saying? So
I do, but and let me finish this thought so that people, you know, don't, I know we're going to get to this, but when you read the article that says that we aren't charging as much as our neighbors, it begs the question, why not? Well, and what you're saying to me is we are charging what we can charge.
That's right. That's right. And I think the answer I give, compare Chandler and Tempe. I mean, you're right in the middle of them. Tempe, you're way ahead of, okay? I mean, it's where you are in the urban cycle as well, and how you have financed before, and what you can pass on.
But, and I guess, Vice Mayor, I look at it too, is if you look at some of the higher ones, North Peoria and things of that nature, and you look at the installed infrastructure that's up near Lake Pleasant, which is really their part of their North Peoria, and you compare that, there is absolutely nothing there. Compared to even the far southeast parts of Mesa, there is at least some basic infrastructure, some response systems down there for fire and police, some roads and things of that nature. So,
but then you get back to Scott's question of if there's nothing there, then what are you basing the impact fee on?
For them, it's a buy-in approach. I mean, it's a plan-based approach for Peoria, where they're anticipating new development. And again, this then starts getting into the city's financial structure and how, because of our financial restrictions, we restrict what our future plans are.
There's the there's the other piece of the puzzle.
Let me jump in here. That's that's the key issue right there.
Yeah.
If Mesa can only base these fees on a level of service, our level of service, I can tell you pretty quickly, is less than even many of these other cities. So there's both a growth factor, as well as you compare the acres of parks per resident, EDU, whatever you want to call it, and the improvements they put in their parks, we don't compare. And so when the formula is thrown in, our calculation drops off. Then we have the other restriction, which puts us that we have to reimburse after 10 years, which for a city that is trying to look into the future, not just for the next 24 hours, is another huge restriction for us to have to reimburse it. No other city that I understand that's on this list has that same restriction. So we put ourselves in a very difficult position trying to, one, match levels of service, a comparative level of services with other cities when we're restricted to what we're doing today. And then,
but Chris, we can remove that restriction.
We can remove that
or restriction. Change that restriction. Even the home builders were looking at 15 years. And if you look at, and I can understand the issue having to do with firefighters, police officers, and things like that, when you're talking about you can't build a fire station, you can't anticipate building a fire station if you don't have the general fund operating money to operate that fire station. But I find it more difficult when you're discussing parks, because a park could be open space like Red Mountain Park, where you haven't developed anything. It's just that open space. Down the road you might develop something, but this is the place where I'm having a little bit of difficulty understanding why you couldn't use that methodology on parks that would assess to allow you to purchase the land.
Well, I think we could, but the comparison then to other cities is that they are putting parks in with significant improvements. So that fee is going to be quite a bit different than just a land acquisition cost. If that's the question was, if you compare us to other cities, I mean, their level of service in a park isn't just buying the land. Their level of service is buying land and putting improvements in.
Parks is an interesting example. I mean, I don't want to get too much into it because I'm not an expert on it, but your neighbor Queen Creek. I mean, I've been there a couple of times, but they don't have anywhere near the types of park offering that you all have. But if you look at their impact fee, they're close to the top of the list in terms of the total amount of impact fees charged in the valley, all right? Mm-hmm. And almost half of it is parks. I don't know if you have noticed that, because the way they have a different type of a setup. They're basically, it's an open space type thing. I think they're trying to keep a rural type. But it's over $5,000 in creek charges per house for a park impact fee.
So if we change this to say, and Councilmember Summers, I should call on you, if we change this to say parks and open space, would it make a difference in terms of what we could charge?
Just by changing the name, it wouldn't. It'd be how you calculate it, but you...
The philosophy, if we changed the philosophy so that we were looking at open space as well?
Let me go back to, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to charge more out in the eastern area, or are you trying to have a higher fee overall, or what?
Councilmember Summers.
I'm not just trying to have a higher fee overall. What I'm trying to do is set for the future a very large swath of land around the GM that has absolutely no infrastructure, and we should be recovering some costs for there so that we affect the quality of life positively, that we affect the services positively, and we get what we need as far as parks and streets. Well, we don't do streets. It's a different system. But parks, the police, and fire, and water.
Let me add on that one. Terry spoke at the beginning about looking at future methodologies, and one of the things that we're going to look at very heavily in the upcoming year, and it'll be part of your budget consideration, will be a review of the southeast area, including the General Motors area, and those develop the Levine property, the DMB, and things of that nature, and how best to finance this type of infrastructure. And as Jim said, impact fees, while we have an underlying level for impact fees, the other issue of CFDs or some other focus on, or some other structural issue on how to pay for those, I think will become more apparent as we get into that process. I mean, we're looking at it in terms of transportation issues, development issues, service requirements, park acreage, all of those things will be into after this.
And when you get to what my issue is here, it's that I want to have the ability to acquire the land in Southeast Mesa, in other parts of Mesa, where land acquisition is possibilities are going to go away. And because of the new growth, we are going to need that open space, that parkland in the future, and I am trying to enhance our ability to purchase that land for those residents. And I need to call on a couple of council members here. You want to answer that, and then I'll take sure. Council Member Griswold.
No, I'd rather hear the council members and then see if the answer. Okay.
Council Member Griswold.
Just a technical question for Terry Williams first. If I take down an old house in West Mesa, bulldoze it, and put a nice new house on there, is there a parks impact fee on that? Because I'm replacing like with like. In fact, I'm improving what you've got.
No, sir. As long as it's still a single-family use, there would be no impact fee of any type.
That's some incentive to take down something old in the west and not go to a vacant lot on the east a little bit. And this,
there would be that incentive. And similarly, if there were a commercial property, and even if you're going to increase, say, the size of the water meter from what had been there previously, you only pay the differential between the two prices of water meters for impact fees. So there is a credit both for redevelopment or for infill. Infill being you're charged the same as new construction, but for redevelopment such as you're discussing, yes, there is a very decided benefit under our current ordinance.
Now, the other thing that I've always believed new growth should pay for itself, but our mechanism doesn't always allow that. It seems to me, from looking at the financial data I'm getting, every new resident that's coming into the East is bringing less and less money with them because we exist purely on sales tax, and they've got other choices where to shop. There's other malls in neighboring cities, other car dealerships in neighboring cities. So everybody coming in, so we can build the police or fire station, we just don't have the money to put a policeman or fireman in that area. So our current financial model has, we have 850 policemen now. The model is to stretch those 850 to 150 square miles and 650,000 people from 450,000 people. That seems to be the model, which doesn't seem to work. So impact fees doesn't seem to be the whole answer, even part of the answer right now.
And again, impact fees is just based on the capital component. Operationally, that's the other issue of our budget, and that's always been our problem.
Right.
And you're right. It's the financing, the fundamental financing structure that we have chosen for the city.
And that was set for a city of 12,000 people in 1945 for a 7-square-mile city, our financial structure. Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
Thank you. I just wanted to bounce off that. Isn't that a self-perpetuating problem? Because we can build the fire station, we can't staff it, and if we can't staff it, therefore we're creating a problem where we're not providing a higher level of service, so that's negatively impacting our
impact
fees.
It doesn't allow us to, right, exactly. That was my point, yeah. Exactly.
I'm having so much fun with this.
It's a downward spiral.
That's
one way.
It keeps you
lower.
Where you are right now. It doesn't allow you to get ahead.
Which builds on problems in the future because we can't build this fire station, which lowers the impact fee, so we can't build the next one out and the next one out, and same with parks and same with police stations. Lie ahead, Bobby. Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry, Vice Mayor, just a couple issues. One, to build on Terry's, I use the example all the time of the old Montgomery Ward store at Longmore in Southern that was torn down, and we put in, there was a new Target store that came in there, and that was redeveloped, really. there was no impact fees charged to that development at all. So it helped to do that redevelopment, and that's the offset that Terry's speaking of. Now, if they would have gone to a two-story floor or something like that, that would have had more square footage, then there would have been an incremental difference, but only in that instance.
Thank you. Councilmember Rawls.
I don't think I'm an advocate for splitting the district or the city on parks, but let me try to pursue, I think, Scott's line of questioning. It makes perfect sense if you're using the asset-based model that the fee would be higher in the west than it is in the east, because that's where all the assets are now that you use to divide into the number of such. Is there a methodology for parks that's available that would do what Scott has suggested, which is charge more in the east and less in the west?
Okay.
Explain plan-based.
Yeah. Well, because of the, this is a little bit redundant, the reason that parks are probably the least, the worst example to do what you all are talking about is because of two factors. One is we've talked about the level of service already being higher in the west, which is a factor. But the other is that parks are, so much of the parks impact fee is based upon land costs. I mean, you know, just the actual acquisition of land. And generally, whether it's Mesa or any other city, the further out you go, the cheaper the land is, which is going to, you know, push the fee down. Now, that you've got a little bit different situation, but generally the types of fees that, if you're trying to have higher fees out on the perimeter, okay, rather than, you know, and in the inner city, lower fees, the types of fees that lend themselves to that are what I call the linear services, roads, water, and wastewater, where you have to extend lines, because that's a cost that is based on distance. Okay, that's the only one. Police, fire, any of the others, you're going to get into this type of situation. If you wanted to give an area a break, okay, you feel like that they've already paid, their level of service is already there, the, what you would want to look at then is maybe just lessing out that portion of the city and not paying that specific fee, okay, like the central area or something like that. And you can do that. That's legal. You don't have to charge everything. When we did fees for the city of Kansas City, the entire pre-1950 city limits, which is the core, it's only about one-fourth of the city today, does not pay any fees, because basically they already have. If anything, their infrastructure issues are of an aging, deteriorating nature, which is certainly not an impact fee issue, right? And you could do that. I mean, if you wanted to define an area, you know.
I'm not sure it's so much a desire to lessen the impact on the rest of the city. It's a desire to make the area that is growing get closer to growth paying for itself. And so my question, again, is there an established, recognized, legal methodology available if we wanted to split the city that would allow us to have a higher impact fee for parks in the east and a lower one in the west?
I think you ought to look at, and I hate to, because we haven't talked about this special district focusing on improvements.
Okay, I know, that's not an impact fee.
Yeah. No, that's not an impact fee.
Okay, so my question here today is there a impact fee methodology that would accomplish what I have described?
I think it would be difficult to accomplish everything you're looking for with an impact fee.
That's very valuable information for us, because we've been talking about can we do it. Now we know we probably can't.
Yeah.
So, okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Griswold.
I thought if you used a plan-based methodology, mm-hmm, and you split it, there's very few parks going to go into the west side. So the plan-based, you'd have very little fees. On the east side, there's a huge need for infrastructure. On a plan-based, you could sort of predict and plan and charge per capita on that area. Isn't that right on methodology?
And Terry did suggest that I mentioned, let's just take water or wastewater, okay? If all of the lineal improvements, all the extension lines are out in the east, okay, you could have a district there and you could prorate those costs just in that area. You see what I'm saying? That's plan-based, because the level of service isn't there yet. It's a future thing. It's looking forward rather than backward.
Right.
And you can do either way. That's the essence of the two basic. We're going to confuse you talking about all these different approaches, but they're basically fundamentally in two parts. They're looking backward and looking forward. All right. They're the buy-in or consumption. In other words, what you got, you're moving to town, you're going to buy into our level of services. Okay. Or you're moving to town into a virgin area. Here's what it's going to take, and we're going to prorate our future cost to that, and you're going to pay it buy-in. I mean, it's plan-based. It's future.
See, and I think that's where I've been arguing for 3 years for more of a plan-based looking forward. Now, it's tougher to figure out what you're going to have, particularly if you don't have the money to operate it. But on parks alone, buying land now, you know it's going to be more expensive. It's not going to be available in 10 years. It makes very good sense to me on a plan-based one to do parks in that methodology, particularly in the east. Do it the whole city. But since you have very little on the west, it's going to be heavily on the east. That's going to be the plan-based. So if you move in the city, you're going to help pay for the new parks.
Well, you have a piece of a plan-based or improvements-based in this recommendation, and that's for the lines. We look out 7 years based on your master plan on both water and wastewater, lines. So it's not new concept in here, even. We've got that as a component. Your water and wastewater fees are a hybrid. You know, we're looking back on treatment plant, right, forward on lines.
Right. I think what Councilmember Rawls was saying was, can you do that on parks?
Jim, I think that's what we're struggling with here.
Yeah.
We understand the water, the wastewater.
Okay.
That's all fine. There is a reason we're focused on parks, because this is the place that we're having a difficult time understanding. We can look forward. We can see what we would need in terms of parks and open space in that part of the community. We can conceive of a plan that we think those residents should help pay for. We don't see this model as getting to that place. And what we're asking is there a model that uses the plan-based system that could get us to a place where these residents are then paying for purchasing that open space?
Brian, you want to explain how we're really using impact fees?
And I guess my concern is that one of the things is we have a lot of parkland that we've purchased previously that's built into our inventory right now that is undeveloped. It's because we have bought it just for the exact reasons you're speaking of, Vice Mayor, that we know there's no more of it being built, and we need to acquire it while it's there and available. But one of the issues, and Councilmember Griswold spoke of it, is we need, in order to have a plan, usually that assumes you're going to operate it. You're going to have, if you're going to say we're going to have a park out here, people are going to assume that that park is going to be developed and usable for them. Right now, our financing structure, our financial forecast doesn't anticipate that we're going to have the money to operate any additional facilities into the future. So then you end up in this circular argument.
I agree, Brian, but that's why I asked the question about should we change our strategy so that it says parks and open space, as opposed to just defining a park as being something that has playground equipment on it, that we mow the lawn, and we look at this as a place where people can go and run around without necessarily having a constructed field. And would that make a difference? I apologize that I don't think I articulated that well enough early on so that you all understood what I was saying. Councilmember
Summers? I would just add to that I'm not interested in shooting myself in both feet here. I mean, this is a problem. We can fix this problem. The financing, the operations cost is another problem. We'll address that continuously over the next few years, but let's fix this one. We can fix this one. Does it mean that maybe in 10 or 15 years or however many years we do this, we may end up giving that money back? Sure. But at least let's have that money to use if we can, and if we end up being able to operate these things. The other thing is, just quickly, is I'm not looking at the parks. I think public safety and fire, we could throw those into when we get to those. So keeping the argument on parks, just think ahead as far as that's concerned.
Councilmember Rawls.
And again, if I can go back to where we started on this discussion, which is page 11, which is whether we should split the city on parks. And it applies to the public safety and everything else. We do, in a sense, split the city, because if we impose, as you pointed out, Rex, as we impose the impact fees, most of the new development that has to pay the impact fees is in the new areas. So the people who are in the established, developed areas don't pay the impact fee anyway, because there's no raw land to develop. So the burden, even though the price is uniform across the city, the burden falls on the people who move into the new areas, much more so. So in a sense, there is a practical division of the city. My concern is if we divide the city officially, then, as I understand it, the impact fees that are raised on the west side can only be spent on the west side, and the impact fees that are raised on the east side can only be spent on the east side, and I think that puts artificial handcuffs on the council in trying to determine what to do and where to do it. So that's...
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, that's absolutely correct. Furthermore, we believe, we can run the calculation for you, but we believe we'll also end up in total generating less impact fees through that method if you divide it into two areas.
And I would agree that that was the original piece of the discussion. I think it got expanded a little bit to, and my question, I'm still not sure that I'm clear on the answer on that. I agree with what you're saying, Tom, that splitting the city, I don't think makes sense. I think you're correct. It does get split that way functionally. But the question becomes, if we change our focus of parks to parks and open space, and we don't have the preconceived notion that purchasing the land means that we have to put a field in there and do all of those kinds of things, if our level of service does not have to be the same across all of our land, can we look at a methodology that looks forward and says we need this much open space in this part of the community? Is that a clear question?
Yes, and the answer is yes.
So, but Vice Mayor, then what you're saying, though, then to one part of the city is you're only going to get a certain type of park that won't have ball fields and practice fields. It'll just be open space with trails. I mean, you're defining different level of service. All I'm saying is you're defining a different level of service in order to, I guess, get to that different fee. I think that's what I was hearing.
I'm defining it that way for today. That doesn't mean that tomorrow we can't come up with the operating expenses to then build the ball field on that park. I'm not saying that all future parks would be that.
Right, but then I guess what the impact fee, though, collects for is more than just the land acquisition. It's for the improvements that go on. So in the future, we won't have the opportunity to collect that fee related to the improvements to the park when we have the operating expenses. If we change our structure. That's what I'm saying.
That's true, but I did ask the question of Terry yesterday, if when you collect parks impact fees, do you have to say, well, this much of the impact fee we collected for the improvements, this much for the land, now we have to spend this much for improvements and this much for the land, but you can spend it anywhere in the parks area as long as it's in parks. And my issue is making sure that we have the land available down the road, that nobody's making any new land. So how do we have that land available so when the time comes that we have the money to build the improvements, we have the land to build the improvements on? And if changing the methodology so it says parks and open space, and that doesn't mean a park is necessarily an improved area, it's an open space area, and down the road when we have the money, we could construct on it. Does that make some sense?
Well, but I guess the assumption today, I guess, is that the impact fee for parks is assuming the blended level of service across the whole city. So it's going to be at a higher, which includes the land and the improvements. So if you divide the city up to an area that really is only going to be looking at an impact fee related to land acquisition.
I'm not dividing the city.
Okay. You're just
Councilman
broadening
Rawls.
The definition of...
She's basically saying parks, we're not going to have a parks impact fee anymore. We're going to have a parks and open space impact fee. And it's going to be citywide. And as we try to plan ahead, though, in determining what that fee is, because we don't have the financial viability now to operate a playground, ball field complex, well, we still want the money to buy the land, so there may be a lot of open space parks.
I just don't know. I guess I'm struggling with how that's different than what we have assumed in the rate today. What element we're adding.
I don't know if it is.
I don't think it changes, I guess.
It's the future planning aspect of it.
Right. It's doing the planned, whatever that phrase was.
So I guess the future planning is different from today because it's going to provide for more park per resident. Or is it just because the parks won't necessarily have the improvements on them?
Yeah, if you use the buy-in approach in order to justify a fee to buy a bunch of land in the east, we also have to assume that we're going to be able to improve and staff and operate those. What we're now suggesting is that's not necessarily the underlying assumption for everything.
But I don't know that necessarily changes this formula, per se.
It might not, but we don't know.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to say it. This sounds kind of, you know, any impact fee has to be based on a level of service, all right? And that level of service is a sliding thing. You can charge the level of service today, and the nice thing about it, and probably 99% of the fees we do is at that level because it avoids the issue of deficiencies. In other words, people are buying into the community at what your level of service is right now, because the courts have said you can't charge for deficiencies, and that takes complications. It makes you maybe vulnerable for a court case, you know, to avoid that. So, but we're doing something a little different. I think you all probably already understand with you. We've actually slid that level of service back 3 years for three of your facilities here. I mean, for parks, police, and fire. Now, that even is safer. But what that does, it says we're not charging people right now for your current level of service. We're moving it back 3 years. In other words, what you had 3 years ago. That's really what you're calling, I call it recoupment. You're basically, you've already invested that, it's still safe, but it's, you're moving it back. What you all are talking about is moving it forward. All right, that's the plan based. How far out do you want to do? What are you going to promise these people? All right, that gets a little bit more difficult. It's legal. A lot of plan based improvements driven is what a lot of engineers call. It's a little bit more delicate because cities don't always grow in a linear manner. You know, they go up and down, and sometimes it doesn't happen. But we could do that in certain areas. So I guess I'm saying what you're saying, if you really wanted that, it would probably take dividing the city, though, and I don't think that's one of the things you're saying. Because right now, what you're benefiting from is the citizens of Mesa over the last 150 years,
yeah.
Okay, have established a pretty good level of service in parks. You've got some really nice parks. And you're really saying in the future, if you want to come in, even if it's out by the GM, you know, out in the Williams area, you've got to pay for that level of service. You know, they're going to be paying the money, and they're going to be, you're going to be spending it there. You're not really going to be spending it back here in the West anyhow. If you did it a different way, you'd almost have to separate the two cities and then come up with a total plan base, you know, and you know what you're going to have. That doesn't mean we can't add open space. I don't remember exactly what components. I don't think we had a big open space component in your fee. It's mostly more what I call urban type facilities rather than rural or open space. And I really think, I'd have to go back to it, I read it years ago, I think that's what your neighbor, because interestingly, you know, I sort of say Cripple Creek, but you know, Queen Creek right next to this area we're talking about, I think that's why theirs is so high. They certainly don't have the type of facilities you have. They've got more of the open space, the agrarian type of approach, if I recall their study, which is unique, and it's tailored to Queens Creek. It's not, they're not Mesa, and you're not, you know, them. So.
Well, I appreciate everyone taking the time to have the conversation about this. Our intent is to make growth pay for growth as much as possible, and the purpose in that is so that the burden does not rest back on the existing residents, but also so that the new residents get a quality community in which they can live. So, you know, those are the challenges we're facing. Okay.
All right.
Please, go ahead.
You can move on.
Now that we've beaten up the parks.
I want to touch just briefly on the street impact fee question. Again, city does not have a street impact fee by name. We have a different approach. We have through Title IX, 9-6 and 9-8, we have requirements in which developers provide for off-site improvements. They build all of the local streets and a portion of our arterial streets, 24 feet of paving, curbs, sidewalks, landscaping, and so on. We do have a city share program wherein the city pays its portion for the greater than the 24 feet widths on arterials. But the advantage under which we're functioning today is that developers bear all the risk. So they don't, they have the risk of the potential cost increase for materials and timing and all of those other issues. If we went to an impact fee approach, the city would then collect the fees and be responsible to construct and pay for the streets. That means the city would bear a greater potential risk. We can't change impact fees fast enough, potentially, to keep up with escalating material and labor costs, especially the way they were a year ago. And so I think probably a more serious issue than even the cost is that the city's schedule then would dictate the timing of when streets got built and when properties could be developed and when houses could be lived in. because without the street there, I can't give you a C of O, you can't move in. And under our current program, the developers control the time clock instead of the city controlling the time clock.
Terry, for the purposes of moving this forward, I will stipulate that this is, that you're doing this the right way. Does anybody on council have a problem with that? Councilmember Griswold.
I've been reformed by Terry, because I did, when I first came on, all the other cities did it. They collected the money, and, you know, we looked ridiculous and being low. With the price of asphalt and everything else going up, we looked like heroes for the last few years. So I've become a convert thanks to Terry. So,
way to go, Terry. We can skip forward to the redevelopment infill and infill issues.
Yes.
We've already discussed this, at least briefly. I wanted to only remind council that impact fees in terms of infill and redevelopment, impact fees are only part of the process, part of the requirements, part of the total approach. We have other incentives. You know that recently we've modified our off-site requirements. We've modified the appeals that can be done through the city manager's office to reduce those off-site requirements for infill projects specifically. We also are able to waive fees or lower the fee under our current ordinance if a property that is being developed can demonstrate that they are not impacting. So in an older area of the city where the street already has the water line, for instance, if it's a virgin property, we would normally charge the full impact fee. But if the developer of that property can demonstrate that the impact on the water system for them to connect to that existing water line is less than is expected under our impact fees, we can lower that fee or even eliminate it. So there are some advantages even for infill in areas where we've already done near or full improvements. Cultural was another aspect that we wanted to go over with council. Cultural impact fees are, I would say we're kind of reaching a crossroads with our cultural impact fees. Council gave us earlier direction not to include the Mesa Arts Center in the numbers. We took out not only that, but we took out the donated portions of our collections. And as a result of that, the proposed impact fee from the Duncan study goes down slightly from our current level of fees for impact fees. However, if we're going to continue to charge cultural impact fees, it's incumbent upon us to devise a plan in which we're going to recognize how we're going to use those cultural impact fees going forward, which could include, depending on the nature of that plan, some additional burden on the city for O&M costs. It depends entirely, of course, on whether it would be another museum or some other type of project that maybe that doesn't have that kind of burden.
Terry, may I recommend that we, that this particular piece of it, that we save our discussion for when the mayor is back. I know he has some interest in this. He actually wants to maintain some level, his current thinking is he'd like to maintain some level of cultural impact fee. And rather than represent his position, which I don't feel like I can fairly do, is maybe we could take a little dialogue here from the council on how they feel about it, and then move forward and let the mayor bring his input back. Would that be acceptable?
Certainly. We're not needing a decision today.
Councilmember Griswold.
I just had a question. Let's say the Southwest Museum, and you wanted to remodel a wing, or the Historical Museum or something like this. Can you use these cultural impact fees for something like that?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, no. Impact fees are limited to capital improvements. We would have to add on to the museum. That would be a valid one. Or add on to the collection of the museum. That would be a valid approach.
Okay. But repairing or maintaining something that was crumbling, you're not allowed to do with it.
No. You cannot do maintenance or operational funding through impact.
But you can do additions.
You can do additions if you're increasing the square footage, yes. That's eligible for impact.
So the Historical Museum, if we wanted to increase it and use the other money for, they could use their own money for, you know, maintenance or renovation.
Or rebuild it somewhere else. Yes, those would be eligible for it.
Thank you.
Anything else? Tom.
Just on that subject, and I'm sure that both of those museums are now fully engaged in their first year of their five-year plan to move to a privatization model, so we need to bear that in mind as we
assess those cultural impact fees as well. Because they still have been given that charge, right?
Well, I think that's been something suggested. I'm not sure that it's a position of the entire council. I think we've talked about that and encouraged them. Right. They understand that they have all of them. I know the Mesa Arts Center is trying to do that. They're hiring a consultant. The museum and the Museum for Youth are all trying their best to try to get there. I don't know that there's a that five-year, well, you threw me on the five-year, I guess.
I was commenting on what they said when they were here during the budget cycle,
okay.
Which is if you gave us 5 years, we could get there. And so I think there was encouragement from the council at that point
right.
in response to their statement that
sure.
please go forth
sure.
and give it your best
and
shot.
And Vice Mayor and Councilman Rawls, as I, you know, one of the things is where this fee may be useful is if you could, if there were groups out there that were willing to take on the operations of a cultural facility, I think, you know, the historical museum or something like that, where you had a capacity and somebody was willing to take on the maintenance, those would be certainly opportunities, as well as where, and I think what the mayor was talking about is the possibility of creating, not sort of facilities, but whether it's art or cultural things that maybe are stood on their own and didn't necessarily need a significant amount of maintenance or operations, so those could be considered also.
And things like stabilization of the Mesa Grande ruins would qualify under this. Expansion, for instance, of the collection at the Mesa Art Center, of the art portion of the collection, so that you could actually serve more people. So if you're expanding your capacity, those things also would become available.
Those things are eligible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct.
Councilmember Summers.
The statues downtown are not because we don't pay for those?
That's right.
Correct.
We do not pay for those.
Let's say that over and over again.
Okay.
we didn't bring them. We appreciate the private people who paid their money to do that.
But what I would be interested in all seriousness, is to see what I would like to see the budget for the Mesa Southwest Museum and the Children's Museum to see, or at least hear from them what impact this has on their annual budget. Does that make sense? Because if they're acquiring, if they're none at all, is that what you're telling me?
We've not assumed any expansion or.
Well, they can use this for acquiring new exhibits, correct?
Permanent
exhibits. Okay, thank you. That's where I was lost.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
There you go.
Buy that tux, you got a few weddings coming. Yeah, that was Kyle. I was looking at you. The recommendation from staff is either that we eliminate the fee or that we develop a plan, one or the other. And so we need to do one or the other. This council needs to decide either to eliminate the fee or develop a plan for the use of the fee. And I know the mayor had some input on that he wanted to provide. Okay, fire.
Good. Fire, this starts a section on, again, these are standards-based approach. We're just updating the replacement cost for the various facilities and equipment. We changed the methodology for fire and public safety, our police factor, our last go-around. As Jim has already stated this morning, we are up to date with our methodology on that. We will just be updating the values. I would kick you over then to page 19, slide 19. How do we compare with other cities? Well, we compare favorably or not favorably, depending on your point of view. I want to tell you that I've inverted this chart because I think it's better to have the higher numbers at the top of the chart. Jim's chart
is the right.
High numbers at the bottom.
I agree with you.
But Mesa is down near the bottom. Our current fees for a single-family residence, for comparison, that's what I'm using, $5,233. The proposal with cultural would raise it to $8,634, about a 65% increase. It still keeps us below the valley average, above the state average, but below the valley average. And you can see where Chandler and Gilbert are with their proposed new rates. Curiously, of course, Phoenix has multiple districts.
Terry?
I'm sorry?
You have 0.65%, but you really mean 65%, right?
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yes.
Mm. Councilmember Summers.
I was just going to repeat a comment I made earlier,
yes.
which is we're low, we stay low, and part of the issue with staying low and getting
new residents to pay for themselves so that our current residents don't pay is the fact that we have a lower level service, a self-perpetuating, spiraling problem, right? That's why we can only go up so far?
That's correct, at least to a degree. Again, at the beginning, I mentioned that we have a residential development tax. It's not an impact fee, but because we assess it and collect it at the same time, it's often seen as it. Council is aware that there's a separate ordinance change proposal coming forward to you that would raise the fees that provide for the cost of the vehicles for trash collection and recycling to single-family residences, multifamily residences. That is the blue barrel and the black barrel that we provide to all our homes. The proposal coming forward from Solid Waste is to raise that $130 current fee for a single-family residence to $177.51.
Terry, could you hold for 1 second? Council Member Summers has a question.
You sick of hearing from me yet?
First of all, what catches me is residential development tax. You don't see the development tax, so this is not a property tax, right? This is on development. So current residents do not pay. This is new residents
construction only.
So folks that are just looking at this slide don't do what I did the first time I saw it and think this is a property tax. It's not what's going on here. This is a tax on new property. Second thing that I noticed on 21, which you happen to be there, where the heck did we come up with $177.51? Jack? Is that you?
Vice Mayor, Council Member Summers, part of this report has a residential development tax report that calculates specifically how we get to that point. And we use capital costs for trucks and bins. And the calculation shows that to encompass the total cost of a vehicle, you equate it to how many homes you can service on a weekly basis, how many barrels you would have to buy to accommodate those homes. We use a 60-gallon blue and a 90-gallon black. We capture the total cost and we divide it by the number of homes that a truck would and a driver would service in a week. And we get a total of around $639,000. We divide that by 3,600 homes, and we get $177.51.
Can we round that?
We can take the penny.
Well, what we've done is we've rounded.
I'm actually thinking of adding a few pennies for future use. Could we round it to 180? And why not?
Well, then the methodology has all been to recover cost. And so I don't know. Yeah. I think.
Yeah. Okay. And that's a point in time.
And we will update this as cost.
And that's the other part of this. Since it's a point in time, the day that we enact this, the next day it's going to be out of date.
And part of the recommendation is to look at this henceforth yearly and come back every year just to update it.
Is there, I guess for our city attorney, is there some way that we could, on this particular piece, index this to a rate of inflation? So that we're not having to adjust. Does it make sense? Because this hasn't been adjusted in some period of time. So can we attach this to a rate of inflation so that it comes back every year automatically with that increase based on the rate of inflation for these figures?
So you want it to come back? My recommendation is that it come back every year with review similar to development fees and all other fees that come before the council. What I'm hearing you say is bring it back, assuming that an inflator and council will still consider
it. Or you want an automatic inflator?
I would prefer an automatic inflator. This hasn't been addressed in how many years? Since 96?
Perhaps.
7?
2001.
Perhaps the recommendation.
2001.
Council Member Summers, I wasn't aware that there was a recommendation for its coming back annually. Would having it returned to us annually for review address the same purpose that you're looking for?
Be fine.
Yeah. Because you're right. You're absolutely right. This hasn't been, it apparently has not been looked at for some time.
Well,
so
my concern was in looking at this, it's been 6 years. I mean, we're not recovering our costs anymore.
Exactly.
And I would have preferred to either index it, or if that's going to be a problem, because I saw you wince, then having it, then making sure this comes back, Terry, annually.
Which would, Vice Mayor, Councilman Summers, which would essentially do the same thing, because if we did that, we'd actually be able to give you the actual cost of the vehicles, the barrels, and so you would then know what that inflationary adjustment should be on an annual basis. We bring it through the budget process. We just didn't, we need to bring this through the budget process. I think that's what we should say. But we are behind, and as a result, we're not covering our cost on new customers.
We can't do that. I mean, we can't do this again where we're waiting 6 years before we change it.
Yeah.
I misspoke. I mean, that's not good. So if we can at least bring this back annually, then that would keep me out of trouble. And just the same thing, and I think Tom wants to yell at me.
Councilmember Ross?
I don't want to yell at all. I'd rather do it annually than have the CPI, because this way we get actual information on the cost of these items as opposed to the general CPI, which includes bananas and all the other stuff. So let's do it annually, focused on trucks and bins.
These are garbage trucks, so bananas would actually be relevant.
But not part of the cost.
Councilmember Jones.
Well, that's exactly the point I wanted to get to, because I'm afraid of an index, because it doesn't always include all the relevant numbers that we need. It's somebody else's calculation.
Right.
So we need to look at real, tangible, what our costs are and evaluate it. And yearly, I think, is very appropriate.
Councilmember Griswold.
As much as I like seeing Duncan and Associates, I like this process be done without having to hire an outside, someone flying in from Oklahoma to be able to do this.
I think this one was all internal.
Right.
Well,
Mr. Duncan's sitting there smiling because he had nothing to do with it. And he didn't have to answer the bananas question.
On the other hand, Mr. Duncan's thinking after today, he's not coming back. So.
I think Councilmember Summers' point is well taken, that we should not let this go. Years at a time.
We'll assure you that Jack will bring it back every day.
Okay. Don't you like those promises made on your behalf, Jack?
Chair and I will talk later.
Yes, sir, boss. Anything else on this item? Okay.
Vice Mayor, moving on.
Yes.
Thank you. We've listed on slide 22 some of the other elements, pretty much administrative, that we're going to be changing when we get to look at the actual ordinance. So besides the numbers that are in the tables, we're also going to be revising the wording, make sure that it's clear how we calculate the credits. There's been some procedural matters that we've had to interpret along the way. I want to include that into the actual ordinance. I want to be able to round off language to whole dollars and so on. And we've also put in here either to eliminate, or as council directs, if you want to raise that 10-year limit. As far as we know, we're the only Valley City that has a limit on it. We do know that the home builders had suggested a 15-year last go-around, a 15-year limit on it. I don't think that's in the current draft that's being discussed at the legislature, but we're not sure how the state will come out on that. We'll see. We may be mandated to have a different requirement than we have, or just eliminate it as the council directs.
And my preference would be to eliminate it. Given the fact that our growth is slowing down, it makes sense to me to eliminate it. But if not, then go with the 15-year. Is there any thought on the council on that?
Sure.
Okay, on that one? Okay, Tom prefers the 15.
Excuse me, I'd prefer, not to choke while I'm talking, but I would prefer to at least eliminate it for a while. Let's see what the state does with it. A little bit of that is self-interest. I think my district will probably be the one to suffer more than any other, given the need for infrastructure. So,
Councilmember Jones.
While I can see doing the elimination and waiting for the state, I also know that we still struggle with credibility with individuals, and maybe leaving the 15-year on it gives them more of a comfort zone of not leaving it open-ended.
Councilmember
on the issue of credibility, Terry, how much money have we had to give back?
As far as my knowledge, we have never given back any refunds under this 10-year limit.
So we've been using it as...
Ryan and Chuck are very efficient at spending that money effectively.
I don't know how that sounds, but...
And legally.
Legally and effectively.
Legally.
All right, so we've been using it legally, effectively, for the purpose in which it was intended, for the quality of life and public safety of the people here in Mesa, and thus far we've not had to refund. So I think given that wonderful track record, it's worth considering eliminating it, at least for now.
Councilmember Griswold.
You know, I like the assurity if you take a fee from somebody and you don't use it, you return it to them. But how much accounting work is there in keeping it for 15 years and whatever it is that is costing us money?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, that's a difficult question to answer because we've never been faced with that problem. We've always been able to, as Councilmember Summers outlined, effectively, legally, properly expend those funds for their intended purpose.
But we can show that something raised 10 years ago was used in the last 10 years. That takes a great deal of tracking, and this funds came from here and from this time. I see Chuck coming forward.
The tracking,
knowing our antiquated accounting system, it must have been a challenge.
What we do is use the first in, first out approach, so we can track back on the number of dollars collected in a year, so we know approximately what the number of years are.
Separate accounts and XYZ housing development?
No, sir.
How would you ever refund XYZ housing development?
That's why we would not like to get to the limitation and have to address that.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Rawls.
See, that is a problem. If you eliminate it, if you don't ever, and you stop keeping track, and then somewhere down the road you decide you want to have the limitation, I don't know how they go back and recapture the information that they've had.
I think it would be the same approach, Councilman Rawls, because we'd still have to use the FIFO,
right.
So we would go back
maybe,
in time.
Maybe
so
right.
I don't know that the elimination...
So it doesn't really matter.
It wouldn't matter.
From an accounting standpoint, it doesn't matter to you whether we have a 15-year, a 10-year, or a no.
Correct. I would just not like to get into a situation where...
It's just a policy decision, then it's not a cost or... staff-driven issue. Okay.
And the issue really is if we ever got to the point of having to return it, that would be a headache then, right?
Yes. Yes, it would.
So,
well, I think what you're hearing is either 15 years or eliminate it. Don't stick with the 10 years. And some of this will be driven by what's happening in the negotiations that are happening with the Home Builders Association. Councilmember Summers.
And to be fair, we're not talking about keeping this in perpetuity. We need to spend it, but as our growth rate slows, it's going to take the city longer to utilize some of this money for new parks, etc. So it allows us a little more leeway as far as time constraints, because if we have to refund this money, that still doesn't eliminate the need for the park or the police station, the fire station, but what it really is going to be a headache as city growth starts to slow, but the needs do not.
Brian, did you want to comment on that?
That's correct, Councilmember Summers. I was just going to add that, again, when we look at the, as Terry indicated, I think 9 categories on impact fees, we have not run into an issue, nor do we anticipate an issue on probably 8 of those. Maybe libraries and cultural over time, and Terry spoke of the need to have an identified plan for the cultural facilities, which would then meet those timelines. So, but I mean, our anticipated wastewater, water, yeah, police, fire expenditures in the future, we would not anticipate any issue having taking care of those over time.
Thank you. Councilmember Griswold.
And we do keep a lockbox type accounting system where if you collect monies for a library, you can't use them for a police station. You can't use them for operations. It has to be used only for parks for parks, libraries for libraries, police for police, and only for new structures.
Right. The ordinance that council passed originally to set up impact fees established specific funds for each of those areas. So they're each identified individually. Chuck knows the beginning fund balances and the ending fund balances each year on all of those. And they're all, again, water can, as you said, water can only be used for water, police, fire, et cetera.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, there is also now a state statute requiring annual reporting on the expenditures of all of those impact fee funds. So we must track it and report that to the state.
And that's a really good point to make, because there are some urban legends out there that there are cities in the valley that take their impact fee and just throw it in their general fund and spend it however they want. And legally, they can't do that. If they're doing that, they're in violation of state law. Okay, go ahead.
Just one slide to show you that we are making some presentations over the next couple of weeks to various interested parties and stakeholder groups. And coming back to council for a public hearing, we anticipate at the end of April. Our timeline, if we stay on track, would have us before council once again at the latest February 20th for you all to adopt by resolution the notice of intention. Again, that was included in your packet. It's simply, as its name implies, that we're giving notice to the world that Mesa is considering changing its impact fees, and it formally begins the 60-day public comment period. Once council adopts, which we anticipate will be early in May, there's a 90-day delay in the effective date. That's also mandated by state statute. We're on track, we believe, for an effective date of August the 5th for these to become effective. So even though we're only in February and we're talking about it, we're talking about something that's not going to be effectively changed until August. To recapture, there are five areas that we're looking for direction from council. Specifically, ultimately, we'll ask that you accept the impact fee update study produced by Duncan Associates, that you adopt the new methodology for water and wastewater, that we adopt the new rates for the other impact fees, unless council chooses to modify those that are identified in the study, that you give us direction on cultural impact fees. Do we repeal it entirely, or are we going forward with the fees that are modified in the study? And then lastly, that we will not implement an impact fee for streets.
And some of that direction
you've gotten
from today. Okay. Okay, let me just go ahead, Brian.
I was going to say, Vice Mayor, one of the things we need to underline, and I don't know if Terry did it earlier on, but again, Jim and his firm has done a great job identifying the maximum legal fees that we have out there. Those are up to your discretion. You could always adopt a lower amount, but the ones that are out there are really the maximum legal fees that we have that we can support at this point.
Okay. Councilmember Jones.
Then with the timeline that Terry just presented, are we going to come back and discuss when the mayor is here on the cultural fees?
I have a couple of follow-up notes. One is to ask for that to be brought back to a future study session so we can just focus on that issue. I don't think we need Jim here to have that. That's a policy decision on our part. Mm-hmm. Okay. Councilmember Rawls.
I just kind of want to put a big picture brush to this and just sitting here playing with the numbers. It appears to me that if the main the fees almost double, or it's 65%, most of that, or at least a majority of that increase, is caused by the change in methodology for waste, water, and water. If we didn't have that change in methodology using the estimates that I understand are the staff estimates for the updates, our fees would go to 68.69 as opposed to the 86.34. So as you go out into the community, we've had some briefings on, and I'm still not clear, despite the briefings, exactly what the rationale was for changing the methodology. Make sure that the people that you make your presentations to understand why you're recommending that change in methodology, what it does for the city. Because that's $1,800 of this increase is attributable just to that change in methodology. And then when you come back to us, I am going to be very interested in knowing how those groups reacted to that change in methodology. We did that with police and fire last time. We had a lot of massaging to do. We had a lot of scrubbing to do to get it to where everybody understood it and everybody was comfortable with it. Those numbers were minute compared to the changes and the numbers caused by this change in methodology. Just make sure that everybody understands it and goes from there.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember,
very good. May I say one last thing? A while ago when I was smiling, and I want to explain that because it ties in.
Actually, I was smiling because of over 10 years watching the sophistication of this council in the area of impact fees. When you started talking about indexing, this is right now in Florida, we have a lot of clients, and they're talking about indexing. And they don't know the difference sometimes between a CPI and an ENR indexing rating. And I loved your comment about banana-based, because the CPI is not always or rarely the right type of indexing to look at. You need one that's more construction and cost-based. And that actually is the fundamental difference between the water and wastewater methodologies, because we were doing it in an older, less sophisticated way with your fixed asset listings, and then, which was the original cost and an indexing. And that really doesn't reflect what the real costs are today. What you've got today with the water and wastewater, which is the biggest jump, is a methodology which truly tries to catch today's dollars. It's what you actually are going to be, you know, charged to provide services. That's
right. And my suggestion to you is to make sure that you convey that to these groups with that degree of detail, and because, you know, if we can satisfy them, then it becomes a lot easier for us.
Quite frankly, yeah.
I know you've never been.
We just keep trotting out Gilbert Chandler and Queen Creek numbers. And
I understand.
As long as you like this.
Councilmember Griswold.
Two comments. One, are we going to include parks and open spaces in the general classification?
That's actually on my notes of one of the things to address as in conclusion. So,
and that, and the other one is the $10 million for arsenic remediation that we have to do this year, thanks to the government changing their standards. In my opinion, doesn't do any safety for us. Is this part? Can any of that be recouped through impact fees?
On the arsenic, our approach has been to adjust those type of impacts through our rate processes, more than through our impact fee processes. So where we have those significant types of legislative or mandated changes on those type would go through there. Now, also, any of the implied infrastructure that would be constructed with water related to being necessitated by our new arsenic rules would be built into our asset amounts that are were there and calculated on in the future. So I guess I'm kind of saying a little bit of both.
So keep working with the legislature on the interpretation of our laws. They're costing us $10 million for no benefit. So, okay, thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
I suppose the only thing I would add here for parks, public safety, and fires that we still consider whether we want to stick with this methodology or go to plan based for those. Tom brings up a great point about how you spend that money. We may be able to mitigate some of that, however, with where we draw the line dividing the city. But that's something at least to look at. We may end up having to just go with this recommendation, but we can consider that.
Well, let me include that in my wrap-up here. Did you have another comment, Councilmember Ross? Just in my wrap-up, the one thing that I felt was outstanding as an issue was whether or not it would be beneficial to the city to look at forward planning when it comes to parks and open space, and I'm still not clear on whether that could prove to be financially beneficial to the city to use that methodology. I'm a little less clear on how that would work on police and fire, since we have to demonstrate an ability to hire the police officers and the firefighters in order to staff. So maybe a little more discussion on that one, yeah. Scott, and perhaps some discussion with staff on it, on how you perceive it as possibly working. So I think that that's an issue that still needs to come forward. The cultural impact fees, as we mentioned, need to come forward. The only other one that I have written on my list is that it takes us some period of time to go through this whole process, and it comes back, Jim, to what you were talking about costs jumping. If we had indexed to the CPI, we wouldn't be anywhere near where we need to be. The cost of construction of wastewater lines, of wastewater treatment facilities, of water lines, of anything having to do with construction, with concrete, with asphalt, and all of those things has increased so significantly since the last time we addressed the impact fees that our fees are, that's why I think you see this huge jump, both the change in methodology, but what it addresses is really the huge jump in the cost of construction. If we see a jump like that again over the course of the next 2 years, we're going to be significantly behind. And what I'm wondering is if there's some way for us to internally look at this, particularly on these items that are extremely construction sensitive, the water and the wastewater things, if we need to adjust this again in a year instead of bringing it back in 2 years. So I would ask staff to consider that and see if there's a possibility. I'm not trying to incur full costs for full analysis of everything, but it would have been helpful to us, I think, to have had this a year ago to look at these fees, or, you know, instead of right now, we would have recovered more of our money. Councilmember Griswold.
There is a construction index that takes in copper prices, et cetera, and you can look at that as a trigger. If it reaches such and such point, it automatically comes back to council. It may be biannually. I mean, I don't know. Hopefully copper and concrete and everything have taken the huge jumps they've taken. But land, we know, is steep going up, so it's something to consider.
One possibility, pardon me, I didn't mean to step on you. One possibility is that that could be brought back in a year's time to the Finance and Audit Committee to examine whether or not there's something that should be done. Okay. Council Member.
I see Jim smiling there because you realize that all the savings that you would generate by raising the fees yearly would be consumed entirely by his new study costs. So
you did notice that I didn't recommend bringing in a consultant.
But I don't know how you do your I don't think you can adjust your impact fees without having the kind of backup material that we have here. So
actually, these inflation factors reduce your need for us. But just comment on this. I was interesting that you did bring up indexing because in Florida, it only started about 4 or 5 years ago, and the home builders actually encouraged it because what they were getting frustrated with was what I call sticker shock. And when you go for, now you all are disciplined, you've been looking at this over 2 to 3 years. In Florida, they would go like 5 years, and in 5 years, the fees could double. We just made recommendations in Sarasota County and Lee County, which are two of our clients, over the last 6 months on road and school fees that tripled. All right, that's what shake up the home builders and developers. It's, you know, as long as they know what's coming, and they want to know surprises type thing. And when we were doing Orange County's fees about 5 years ago, after we had finished everything else, a meeting like this, and it signed off on it, a home builder got up and says, "Why don't we add?" And it was an ENR, a construction type index, because they do it every 5 years, so that at the end of the time, there would be less of a gap between what the new study showed and what they were paying. So you're doing it.
Well, I'd like our staff to consider that as a possibility. So if you would look at that, unless there's council objection.
No.
Okay. Councilmember Jones?
But I do want to clarify that if we have to back up anything that we do, but is it necessary to go through a complete study, or can staff internally just say this is our increase in cost? We're just not changing methodology. Right now we're looking at methodology for the whole study and how we're approaching it, but in the future, for indexing purposes, if we're just looking at actual costs instead of the CPI, I guess CPI just put by the wayside because that won't work.
Bananas.
But actual costs, internally, can't we do that and not have to go through a complete study?
That's right, you can.
We would be able to for maybe two or up to three successive
years. Three cycles
years.
And then
we'd want to go back and ascertain by a study that we're still close.
But we're still there. Yeah. Okay.
The court still wants you to review the study because there's a lot more than just that. And you want to for methodological. This is a good example. You've tweaked a lot of things here today. And so
it's just for the in-between times. And I think it might be beneficial. And I hadn't thought about that predictability aspect of it, but that's a very good point. Anything else on this? All right. I think we've beaten up the impact fees issues enough. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you all.
Hope things are as nice in Texas as they are here.
Well, I was in Cincinnati 2 days ago, and it's much nicer here. Don't go to Ohio this time of year.
Wind chill 17 below, I heard.
Zero when I got off the plane. Huh?
Yeah. All right. We have item number 3, which is to acknowledge the receipt of minutes of various boards and committees.
So moved.
Motion and second for approval. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Hear a report on meetings and or conferences attended. Did you have one?
Yeah.
Councilmember Griswold.
On Tuesday night, we had a very good town hall meeting. It was well attended. Good questions on the growth and issues and connecting people with local government. I think it went very well, and I want to thank staff. They gave up their own time on away from their families to be out there and present it. So it's nice to have a good turnout when you do that. And today I'm meeting with Kelly Adams, the CEO of the new hospital at 60th and Chrisman on sign issues. So.
Thank you. On Tuesday evening, I represented the City Council at the Rodel Exemplary Teachers Award. There are 16 teachers throughout the state of Arizona who are chosen for this award, and two of them came from Mesa. And so we were asked to send a representative from the mayor's office. It was particularly fitting for me to be there since one of the teachers getting it was Shannon Geary, who is a kindergarten teacher at Whitman Elementary School, where all of my children attended at least 1 year of elementary school, and most of them all of their years of elementary school. And I was the PTO president there many years ago. Also, Miriam Modamedi, and I apologize, Miriam, if I pronounced your last name incorrectly, who is a fourth grade teacher at Lindbergh Elementary School. These teachers are given an award, some money that goes along with that. The first half of the money comes right away, and the second half comes after they finish training 6 student teachers to be the kind of exemplary teachers that they are. Their feeling is that after a period of just a few years, as teachers are training teachers and touching students, that they will have had the ability to impact 1 million students in the state of Arizona through this program. So that's it's a good program, and we're really proud of the fact that we have 2 Mesa teachers who received that award. That's 3 Mesa teachers in the last month who have gotten very significant awards nationally or in the state. Any other reports? Okay, Chris, we've got the next item, which is meetings or scheduling of meetings or general information.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Reminder, we have our next town meeting will be Tuesday, February 13th, District 6 at Skyline High School. And that will begin at 6 p.m. Our next study session will be February 15th at 7:30 a.m. And then just a reminder, we've rescheduled the council meeting, second council meeting in February to Tuesday, February 20th, because of the holiday before that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We don't have any pre-scheduled public opinion appearances. Do we have items from citizens present?
We do not, Vice Mayor.
All right, then do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All those in favor, please stand up.